Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy sends the awards $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck Dive Studios on this Monday afternoon. Even though you're listening to it on a Tuesday morning. And on the other end of the line, in the Duck Dive Studios with me, Josh Well.
What's up?
Joshua!
I'm not talking about the weather, because I don't know why people just don't realize this, but we don't record these the same day you hear them. So I finally got it through my mind that who cares about the weather on a Monday when they're not going to hear this until Tuesday or Friday or next Monday.
I just stepped outside and it's still pretty warm. It's 1:15 in the afternoon, and the reason we're recording this. A lot of times we do record same day. Some of them we put in the can for later. But most of them we record same day. And they go up 2 or 3 hours later. But today, Justin Martin is coming on the line for part five or six of Becoming Martin. It's coming up in just a minute. Really looking forward to that. We've jumped off into the Duck Dynasty stuff. And some of those storylines, man, are just... they're great. You get a behind-the-scenes look of one of America's most favorite shows in the past 5 or 10 years. It's got to be.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be. Whether people want to admit it or not, there's some people who aren't fans, but... and, you know, then we talk about that. We talk about... the people who became so drawn to it, or I say we talk about it, Martin talks about it, it's some really, really, really cool stuff. A side of it that you don't always see. I'm not going to go into all of it because he talks about most of it, but it's a really, really fun.
All right, if we're going to talk about Duck Dynasty, just you and I with Martin not being here, I want to get into this. Number one, I am sick. And this has nothing to do with Martin coming up. And it has, I was saying this long before Martin was an active member on Duck South, a part of it on this podcast, blah, blah, blah. The Blame Duck Dynasty. The Blame Duck Dynasty generation.
Yeah.
I put this up the other night because Duck Dynasty always gets blamed for the way this generation acts, which I think is ridiculous.
I agree. Did it turn more people's attention toward duck hunting? Yeah, maybe. But it has nothing to do with the way people act while they're duck hunting.
All right, let's play a little game. Play a little game. You answer the question. I ask the questions, you answer them, okay? Number one, how many ducks did they kill on Duck Dynasty?
Best I know, zero. They may have had a show or two where they killed a few, but as far as I can remember, none.
I don't think that they actually showed a kill shot. Now, they may have had a dead duck on the water.
Yeah, it may have been something like that. I don't...
because now that you know it, they shot this stuff in the summer, so they've whitened duck season, unless they had a frozen duck they threw out in the water.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing, and that's what you learn about hearing this stuff from Martin. This is the law was laid down by the Robertson family that we're not shooting this during duck season. They did the first year, the first season. And then after that, they told them if they wanted to come back, and they meant it, and they stood by it. So none of it was filmed during duck season. And that's why I say I don't remember enough about that first season of it to remember if they shot any duck. But I don't think they ever did on an episode. I don't think shot any duck.
The most major question I could ask you. So there's no way that they could actually influence the way somebody hunts by them not shooting ducks on TV. Right?
What do you mean? What do you mean not influence
them? They'd influence them maybe to get into duck hunting, but not the way that they hunt.
Yeah. No.
All right, let's take a look at this. One of the biggest problems, and you can say yes, you agree with me, and then answer the question after that. One of the biggest problems in duck hunting right now, as it stands, is disrespect between hunters.
Oh, absolutely.
It is one of the problems and the reasons why Arkansas is shutting down, closing the doors, putting the sign out, closed for business.
Well, I mean,
partly closed.
The thing is, and this is something that we have talked about, me and you have had countless conversations about, and we've talked to other people about, is somewhere along the way, there's a generation of people, and this is really going to piss people off when I say this, but I don't care. There is a generation of people older than these young guns hunting. There's a whole entire generation of people than these kids that are hunting now who do not care to help the next generation actually learn ethics and woodsmanship. There's a complete entire link of the chain missing. And so I'm not taking up for all these kids because, yes, some of them are idiots. They act like idiots. But they also, a lot of them don't know any better. And the people who they try to ask for help tell them, no, you shouldn't be out there hunting, or they belittle them every time they get a chance. I mean, I say it all the time. It would scare the crap out of me right now if I was a 12, 13, 14-year-old kid who was just getting into hunting. It would scare the crap out of me to get into it right now. And that doesn't just go for duck hunting. That goes for deer hunting, turkey hunting, everything. I'd be scared to death because when it comes to deer, you're all of a sudden, if you can't kill a 150-inch deer every time you walk out the door, you're not cool. If you can't go have a pile of nothing but greenheads, whether you got all the hens and shovelers thrown to the side or not, if you can't take a picture of nothing but greenheads every time you go duck hunting, then you're not cool. And if you don't kill all the legal limit of turkeys in every state where a turkey walks every year, then you're not cool. You're not supposed to be doing it.
All right, so you and Martin are in agreement that it's a cultural problem.
Yes, it's absolutely a cultural problem.
All right, so I end that point to say this. At any point in Duck Dynasty, did you ever see them disrespect an animal or another human being?
No. And that's what drives me crazy about the Duck Dynasty this and Duck Dynasty that. They did nothing but have fun, show respect to not only animals, but they showed respect to family, to friends, to people they didn't even know. And something we talk about with Martin and something that we ask about, we ask if it was planned or not, is the way they end every episode with a family prayer. And he said, no, that's just organic. That's what we did. They didn't script it, and that just happened. So, there's some funny, goofy stuff in every episode. But there's nothing but respect in every episode. There's not somebody saying, hey, you got to go get the fastest boat and the biggest truck and the newest shotgun and all these pretty decoys, or you can't go duck hunt, or you're not a duck hunter. No, you never see that. You mm-hmm. never see anything. You never see anything like that. And the thing, what it boils down to is they're a duck hunting family, and they always have been, they always will be. And then when they were put in a public spotlight bigger than that of just the duck hunting community, a lot of the duck hunting community got pissed about it because they were jealous. And so what are they going to do? They're going to point a finger at the easy target. And that's what they did.
I think it's jealousy driven.
They pointed a finger. They pointed a finger at the easy target.
They pointed a finger at the easy target
out of jealousy. That's all it was. Well, that's all it is.
Third question. All right, let's say this. Another problem in the hunting world, and with it mixing with social media, is a lot of people can ask a question. It goes back to what you said earlier, and they just get bamboozled by hunters acting like smart alecks. It's one of the points that you just brought up just a few minutes ago, and I was trying to find what I'd written about it. All right, if Duck Dynasty is to blame for that, have you ever seen on Instagram or Facebook them ever disrespect other hunters?
Exactly.
You had
I don't want people to think that we're just here just in a love fest with Duck Dynasty. It's what's current, it's what we're talking about in podcasts, and that's why this is getting brought up. But no, they don't. They show love and respect when they show anything.
I'll let you in on a little secret, and Martin may get mad at me about this, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. These guys have been, for years, have realized that duck hunting had a problem, and they've been reaching out to new hunters as a, they don't want the glory for it. They don't even let people really know, hey, look at us, we're helping the next generation get into duck hunting, teaching them the right way, kind of camp deal, but they do want. And you don't ever hear them say a word about it. But if they're to blame, and they're the negative downfall of duck hunting, why would they be doing that?
It's all driven out of jealousy. It just is.
Here's my last point. I'm going to end with this one because this is the one. Here, look, we're losing anywhere from 3 to 5% by my calculation, duck hunters, every year. Every single year, we're losing that many. If they brought in one, just one, should they not be applauded? In a time where we're losing hunters, should they not be applauded if they even just brought one new duck hunter to the table?
Nobody wants to do that because it's not cool to do that. It's not cool to do that. And it goes right back to what we said, I don't remember, a few podcasts ago, because it takes effort. It takes effort to take somebody new, show them something, to actually teach them. It takes effort. It don't take any effort to say, no, I'm right, you're wrong, bye.
It drives me just insane to see people
constantly take
shots in front of a whole generation of people and saying it's the duck side, the duck Dynasty, not Duck South. Duck Dynasty generation problem.
Yep.
They should never be put in a negative spotlight.
No, they shouldn't. But, like I said, it was the easy target at the time. It was the easy target at the time. They were on TV every time you turned it on. They were, you know, my thing... Yeah, and there's two good examples of it. But if nothing else, they brought a respectful awareness to hunting to a crowd who a lot of them didn't even support hunting, much less know much about it or anything like that. And that's the to be incredibly stereotypical, you know, the big city. Hollywood, stuff like that. And those people had no idea. And I'll tell you, somebody else is doing the same thing. Stephen Rinella does it with his Meat Eater show and the podcast. And one thing that I really, really like that they do is they have a deal about once a week where they read off emails and messages they get through social media. And they read ones from people who the first thing out of the gate they say, I do not hunt, or I have never hunted, or I do not support hunting. But through the message, through the email, they say, through what I've learned from you, through your show, through your podcast, whatever, I understand why people enjoy it. I see why people do it. And so he's doing the same thing. He's bringing a respectful awareness to it. And that's what Duck Dynasty did. I mean, it's the truth. And they're bringing it to a much bigger crowd and to a crowd that is very important to hunters, whether hunters want to admit it or not. They're bringing it to a crowd that's very important to it, because you don't have to have everybody that watches a show or listens to a podcast all of a sudden take up hunting. But you've got to have some support from outside of it, some people who actually say, okay, that's cool, you hunt, or that's y'all's thing to do. That's y'all's family time. That's what you're bringing a respectful awareness to it. I know I keep saying that, but that's just what's stuck in my head right now. All right,
so we're safe to say that they're not to blame for the faults in the duck hunting world, right? Right.
No. Yeah.
Right.
They're not to blame.
All right, so two things. I will, before we go off and we get in this interview with Martin, I will leave them with two faults. Two of the things I fault Duck Dynasty and Duck Commander with is face paint and beards.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people came through Mossy Island Outfitters that had grown their beard out just for duck season.
Sure.
And striped their face paint. They didn't care. You know, those guys didn't know how to hide their face.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What's that hurting? Especially for somebody who hasn't hunted much or is just now starting to hunt. I don't care. Paint your face, paint your neck, paint your hands, do everything. Because
they're the worst to hide face a duck.
That's right. And most of the time it's because they don't know any better.
That's right. All right. Well, Josh, I am glad that we came to that conclusion on all those points. Let's get to that interview with Martin now. All right, guys, like I told you on the front end of the podcast, Justin Martin and the Becoming Martin story. We're on to part six now. Martin, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Boy, it's hard to believe it. We're to six parts of my boring story in my mind.
Boy, look, last week, you could not have asked. The audience couldn't have written in written questions, say, Martin, tell us about this. Tell us the backstory about how this got started, blah, blah, blah. You couldn't have given a better backstory to the dynasty at all and how it all began. What a just very detailed.
Well, man, I appreciate that. And we live our lives being pretty well open books and, trying to show transparency in everything that we do. And, I'll continue to live my life like that. That's the way I run the business, is I try to stay 100% transparent with people. And, if you ever want to know what's on my mind, all you got to do is ask. So, I got no secrets. I got nothing to be ashamed of. So, I'm just like anybody else. My britches go on one leg at a time.
Well, as we look at this from a kind of a timeline perspective, okay, we've gotten to the point, we shot the two pilot episodes. They've come back. They've won the 13 episodes. All right, before we start talking about those 13 episodes, real quick,
mm-hmm.
Somewhere in this time frame, you meet your wife, Brittany.
Yep.
This story is about you, Mark. Listen, as much as you were a part of the Duck Dynasty, this story is still about you. That was a part of your life. I know it was a huge part of your life there for a while because it kind of dictated your life, but I don't want to ever lose the focus of you in this because it's such a great story. But we need to talk about Brittany and you meeting her and her, y'all going on to become husband and wife.
Yeah, so in amongst all of that, people realize it or not, so at this time we're still kind of running the company the same as we always had. Our work hours changed, because we couldn't, you know, if they were filming in another part of the office, we couldn't build duck calls because we're going to test the duck call to blow them and all that. So, you know, our work hours kind of changed and moved around, but we also still had Buck Commander, which is the deer hunting deal that Willie started in 2006, kind of with just some buddies and having fun and just because he liked to deer hunt. And so for part of that, I mean, you know, my job here was, you know, I did the, I built duck calls, but, you know, I kind of made it a point to myself to learn how to do everything here. And part of that was, you know, running cameras and all that stuff for the deer hunting. My only request is that they never make me film a duck hunt because I just love duck hunting too much to sit there and watch it behind a lens. I don't want to, I need to be in on the action, but a deer hunt, I don't mind, you know? So, so I went up
except the climbing the tree part. I do know that a little.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. That no, me and gravity, we tight. So I don't like getting real high off the ground at all.
And when I'm with you.
You know, when that company right there has got a bunch of professional athletes in it that are very flexible and can stretch, their steps are a long way apart on a lock-on. You know, there were several times I just kind of had to take a leap of faith climbing that tree and just hope that I was strong enough to hold on. You know, the stuff you do is stupid, you know, just dumb. Thank God for hunter safety system and lifelines now. So I don't know that I'd ever get back in a tree if it wasn't for them things. But so part of it, you know, part of the owners of that deal was still are, you know, Jason Aldean and Luke Bryan, the country music boys. And so I had to go to Nashville to do some stuff. And, you know, we had spent a lot of time in Nashville through all that and even through that time. And I had a friend that said, you know, there's, you know, somebody you need to meet. You know, I think y'all, you know, hit it off or whatever. And we did, it, you know, kind of a somewhat blind date, but we had each other's phone number for him. We just kind of talked back and forth. So when I went up there, I was like, hey, what are you doing? You know, let's, you know, we'll go grab dinner or something. She was like, okay. And, you know, that person was Brittany, who is now my wife. And, you know, we just kind of at first were, you know, she was still in college. I was obviously doing the TV show. It had started airing and, you know, travel schedules and all that, and just busy. We're just kind of, you know, it was hard to even consider a relationship. We met and hung out and, you know, just kind of like we were friends, you know. I mean, we were just really good friends. She would, you know, I'd go up, we spent a lot of time in Nashville, so when I'd go up, I'd always make it a point to see her, and vice versa. When she would have some time from school, she would sometimes come down and visit or, you know, whatever. We were friends that knew that there was probably something more than that, but at the time it was just so hard, just because we were being pulled in every general direction. I mean, you name it, we were being pulled that way, you know, from, you know, dadgum Today shows and all that kind of stuff and speaking requests and appearance requests and all that. So it was just really hard to, you know, kind of build anything there. And I'll never forget, I actually ended up at first kind of just hiring her, so to speak, as to be my assistant to keep up with my schedule and to kind of, you know, as a go-between between like the booking agents and me, because, you know, with filming the show, you weren't on your phone. I mean, you couldn't have your phone on and all that, but she could talk and she knew my schedule and we were that close and I trusted her and, you know, everything was, you know, that kind of deal. And you know, I'll never forget, we went and did an event in Abilene, Texas, at like a farm and ranch show or something like that. And we were, you know, just hanging out, eating dinner after the deal. And, you know, we finally just kind of looked at each other and said, what in the world are we doing? Like, I mean, you know, it's obvious there's something more here. So we started dating. I'll never forget it. It was our official dating date was March the 2nd of 2013. It's, you know, that's generally the woman's part of the relationship. For whatever reason, my mind and memory works with dates and numbers and things like that. So it's kind of funny. A lot of times I have to remind her about our anniversary.
do not feel bad. I'm that part of our mind and my wife's relationship. I'm the date guy.
So we started dating in March of 13, you know, and just – had really never looked back since, you know. I mean, it's been awesome, and, you know, we can discuss marriage at another one, because there's a lot to learn from marriage, I found out, you know. It's crazy to think how that all just started from somebody, you know, saying, hey, I think y'all might hit it off, and like, huh, you know, it proves that, you know, even in that time, I can assure you one thing, I wasn't in no means looking for a woman at any point. You know, I was doing what I did. I had nobody to answer to. Life was fun, going all around the country, traveling, talking, speaking, you know, hunting, kind of just living life on my own schedule. And then, you know, your world kind of gets turned upside down when you meet the person that you're going to, you know, spend the rest of your life with. So it,
I mean, you weren't,
you know,
looking.
Just shows the Lord works in mysterious ways, doesn't he? That's crazy, man.
Seems like that's a lot of people's story. When you're not looking, and I wasn't looking when I found my wife, but it seems like that's when it gets kind of turned upside down, like as you say.
I spent, like I'm sure a lot of people do, you spend kind of your whole life looking for that person, you know, like looking, and then, you know, part of the deal, when you do make that change in your life, is giving the wheels over to God and just saying, you know what, you're in control.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and not saying, hey, you're in control, but I still got a hand on the wheel, you know, saying, hey, you're in control. So I just kind of was like, you know, when it happens, it'll happen. And I just went on living my life, you know. And then about the time that you make that conscious decision, boom, it hits you. I mean, it just, it shows up in your life, and you're like, golly, everything I was looking for was just right here. Like, and all I had to do was, you know, give up control, just become obedient, you know, just like, and it's amazing, man. It truly is. It's, you know, there's a lot of people in this world that'll call it coincidence, but there's just so many things have happened in my life. I can't believe in coincidences, you know.
You know, we're somewhere around that 2011, 2012 point in the timeline. And
mm-hmm.
I'll say this. When the day that I realized how big, listen, I'd always been following y'all. I knew what you meant to the duck hunting world, but what you meant to the pop culture was somewhere around in there. I'll never forget. I was going to an Ole Miss game, and we had, this is when I was living in the Mississippi Delta. We were driving up. One of my favorite things to do when driving to Oxford from outside of Greenwood, go through Grenada, and go across Grenada Lake, across the emergency spill or the levee. I'll never forget going that back way just to see what, you know, because it's fun to look at Grenada Lake, see how much it's drained down during the fall. It usually almost dries up. Well, my wife and I go through there, and I'll never forget at, oh, gosh. What's the name? What's Golden's place there?
Oh, Lakeway. Lakeway.
Lakeway.
Oh, Blondie.
Yeah. I'll never forget making that turn by Lakeway, and there's a line coming out the front door, through the parking lot, back up the road, going to Grenada Lake. And this thing is, it's probably at least 400 or 500 yards long, from the front door all the way back up the road. And that was the point that I looked at my wife and I said, man, these guys, they are really on fire right now. Because you can look at the crowd. Yeah, let me just say this. Let's say that you pan through. You're driving really slow because there's people in line on the side of the highway. But every third person, he's just a regular old girl with fancy makeup on. You know, she's wanting to get in there and get an autograph made. It's not like, I would say 30% of them are just regular people. They probably weren't hunters like you and I and Josh, but they were just, they wanted to be a part of something that was popular at the time. You get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I remember. So that same year, I remember going to Max in August for their little, what do they have? They have that big sale every year.
Right in the middle of August.
And we went there, me, Cy, and Goblin, went there, you know, because they're a dealer. We've always done these deals. Like, I mean, this wasn't nothing new for us.
Yeah.
And when we were pulling up to Mike's Prairie Wings, there was a line wrapped all the way around the building. Like, I mean, there ain't this many people in Stuttgart. We've all been there. We know that. There ain't that many people in Stuttgart.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Stuttgart's one of the few places you can go to Walmart and you ain't got to wait in line. So that tells you just how few people there are in Stuttgart.
That's the truth, too.
You know? And, and we walked up there, and, I remember seeing Chuck and Adam. At the time, Adam Davis was still there. And I was like, what are all these people doing here? You know, they're like, oh, they're here to see y'all. We're like, huh?
In Stuttgart in August.
Yeah, like, and they were like, yeah, they're here to see y'all. We've sold every call, every hat, everything we have of y'all's has been bought, and they all in that line waiting on y'all. And I remember Si looking and saying, well, I thought we was only going to be here 2 hours. And Chuck said, well, y'all may have to be here a little bit longer than 2 hours. And so we sat there, and they cut the line off not long, I mean, like right as we got there. And we went through every person in that line, and we smiled and took pictures, signed whatever they did. And I think it was a two-hour deal turned into about a four-and-a-half-to-five-hour deal, you know. But the deal is it never got lost on us. I was never going to say no to anybody. I constantly, even to this day, you try your hardest to remain humble and realize that these people, for whatever reason, want to meet you, want to shake your hand. And if that's all that I got to do to make this world even a hint of a better place, then by God, I'm going to take the time to do it. You know, and I never wanted anybody's opinion to be colored on anything. You know, I will take the time and sit here as long as it takes to get through everybody. It don't bother me one bit, you know. So,
and I think that speaks a lot to the success of it as far as reaching people who, like Rocky was talking about, didn't hunt, because it was just, they could connect with you, and they could see that, I mean, yeah, the TV show, but they could see that, man, if I ever meet that person, I'm willing to bet they'd have a regular conversation with me. And then when they do, and that does happen, they're like, yeah, okay. You know, then it gives them a perspective, and, you know, it's just which is hard to find when you turn on you call it reality show, whatever you want to call it. You know, so much of it is just, that's not really who they are all the time. But when, I mean, y'all were just on there being yourself, and people knew that. I mean, people can see that. And you know, that's pretty funny that it turned into that long of a deal, but it didn't bother you. Those people were there, wanted to see you, and you wanted to see them. You just weren't expecting it when you pulled in that day.
Yeah, I certainly wasn't expecting it in Stuttgart, Arkansas. Mm. You know, now other places you go and do these things, you're like, boy, that's a crowd, you know. And but yeah, when
I
you
think
start,
that
I
one,
mean, places that you've been 100 times, you know, it's just kind of weird, you know.
I think that one in Grenada was supposed to end at 6:30 that night. Now, it had gotten back to me that I think y'all stayed there until like 7:30 or 8 o'clock until the line was cleared out.
Yeah, we always made it a point to, everybody just to make sure, now, schedule permitting, that we could do that. We would stay there until the moment we had to leave. Like, you know, because if you're airlines or whatever, airlines ain't going to wait on nobody. So if your flight to get home or get to the next deal had to leave at a certain time, we would stay right up until the minute we had to leave. And, you know, we still do that. And, you know, obviously the crowds and the lines aren't what they were then, but, you know, that was just kind of our deal to never get lost into that world of, you know, the only time, and I don't think I've ever said no. The only time I've ever not done it right then was out eating. That was my only, like, bugaboo. Like, bro, you just saw me get my food. Can you let me eat? And I promise you, I'll take all the pictures you want, sign whatever you got. Say hello to your mama, your cousins, your family, whoever. I don't mind. Can I eat my food while it's hot? I mean, you see me. I'm a big old boy, and I like to eat. When it's time to sit down and eat, let's eat. And, you know, I'll pick it up after that. So, you know, that was kind of my only deal. But yeah, man, it was so cool. It was, you know, again, nothing short of like, golly, what has happened here? You know, just kind of.
Well, Martin, going along with what we talked about on the front end of this episode with Brittany, I've got to say this. One of my favorite episodes when it came to Duck Dynasty was the episode where it involves you. And that's the one where you're getting set up on the date. Or it was
Oh, my.
And the girl is going to fixing you up.
Yeah. There's some good stuff that happened in that one. You know, I don't even know where to start. I got to always try to defend my honor on this one to some extent, but let's see here. So we'll start with the one that I get a lot was the mustard packs, because that was very prevalent in there with my refrigerator full of mustard packs.
I forgot about that.
And I'm gonna give y'all all a life hack with mustard. This is what I'm gonna tell you with mustard. I love corn dogs. Okay, yep, you know, prototypical LSU fan, right? We love corn dogs. We smell like corn dogs. Whatever everybody says about us is true. Louisiana folks love to eat gas station food. Deal with it. We ain't worried about it. I don't know why I love gas station fried chicken, but you know what's about a fried chicken? A corn dog. I get it too. But I don't particularly like mustard. So you say, what's all in mustard packs for? Well, here's what I've learned in life. When you need an egg wash, but you're out of eggs to fry something, mustard works the same way. So you just coat it in mustard and then go on about your business. And you fry, you know, if you fry in your crappies and we eat mustard fried white perch with flour on them and all that stuff. So you use it for that. For a lot of times, when I smoke ribs, you know, for some people, I use a mustard base. So I just couldn't in good conscience throw away all that perfectly good mustard.
a Louisiana man is the one who taught me that trick years ago, and that's the only way I fry fish, and I do the same thing with ribs, and I'll do it with like a brisket too, rub it down with mustard. Yeah, that's funny.
And I'm going to eat corn dogs. So, you know, that's just part of life. I'm going to eat me a corn dog, dadgummit. So, you know, all the stereotypes about LSU fans, I don't know if they're all true, but they're true on this one. So, you know, especially, you know, we just got our tail whooped by Alabama. That'd be all right. Just add us to the list.
So they
everybody else is going
to
get whooped by.
Yeah, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
So they went to fixing you up anyway on this date.
Oh yeah.
Before this
date, they stopped and made fun of my socks. Look, I'll tell y'all this, and this goes for anybody out there listening. I'm the world's worst person to buy a gift for come Christmas time, because I don't know if I want it. I go get it, right? I mean, that's just what I do. That's what I did before the show. That's what I'm going to do till the end of time. If I want it, I'm going to find a way to buy it and go get it. So for Christmas every year, I ask for two things, and it drives my wife crazy now, and it always drove my parents crazy, but I'm still going to always ask for two things, socks and underwear.
Hold on. Oh, man. I was going to guess it. That's all I
have. Oh. Yeah, socks and underwear, because you know what I hate having to take time to go to the store to get? Socks and underwear. So if I can get stocked up at Christmas, I got a year supply at any given time of socks and underwear. You know, and you know, we hunt so much that you go through some underwear. I mean, there's times where you ain't got no toilet paper. You ain't, you know, and there's times when it's been hot enough, I just take my socks off and handle the business. You know, so I mean, at some point you're gonna get caught in a bind, so you go through them. And, you know, it's still, my wife, you know, asked me the other day, she said, you know, when you start thinking about Christmas, I said, you know what's on top of my list? She said, I'm not getting you socks and underwear. I said, well, then I'm not going to be happy. So, it's going to be a terrible Christmas if that's the case. So, you know, but that's, so, yeah, I'm trying to debunk all the things that happened in this. But, yes, you're right. So that was the other thing. They made fun of my socks. The only thing they liked was my chair. Which every man has got to have him a good chair. There's just all there is to it. Every man needs him a good recliner. But As far as getting gussied up, yeah, now that was good stuff there when they went through my closet and started pulling out. The only dress clothes I ever had in my life growing up was for, like, Easter Sunday church. I don't get down to it. I say that as I sit there and look at myself wearing a pair of khakis, but that's before I discovered that Under Armour would make khaki pants that are super comfortable, because up until that point, all them other khakis weren't very comfortable to me. You know, I'm a big old boy, and, you know, them old thighs get to rubbing together. They started forest fire, you know.
Hey, I got to tell you this. You and Ramsey Russell were just together the other day at Mojo.
Oh, yeah. I saw him over there.
Ramsey called me on his way home, and he said, "Hey, you know how big Martin is?" I said, "Yeah, big as I am." I just never imagined Martin being that big.
Oh, I hear that one a lot, and I tell them, well, if you go back and watch that show and realize I'm sitting down 90% of the time because I am that big, not to block anybody out, you know? I mean, that was just, which was great for me, because when you're sitting there for 2 or 3 hours doing that stuff, I always had a seat. My feet never got to hurting or nothing, so it was great as far as I was concerned. I win, you know? But, yeah, getting fixed up, so they pull out them khakis and all that stuff, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, whatever. I mean, I'm just the kind of guy that's, be who you are, no matter what the occasion is, you know. Just be who you are, wear what best you got, and go with it. And they picked that out, and then, you know, we come back, and then we have the pretend date with Cy, just because he wants to be funny, right? So if you... which was great, but I mean, I still hear it to this day. How's Tiffany doing? You know, because I kept calling himself Tiffany, and I was like, that's not her name, and don't you mention no other heifers with me. I mean, there's just stuff you never forget. And wearing that feather boa, but when we sat down to do the pretend dinner, look, them khakis, and I don't know why, I can't believe they didn't run this. I guess they thought I'd be too embarrassed. Them khakis split from my crotch to my ankle.
Oh, man. Really?
They had dry rotted or something, and when I sat, they weren't too tight, but when I sat down, them suckers ripped from my crotch down to my ankle. And I was like, oh boy, this is a single taker here, boys. I ain't no more walking in this thing. I went to sit on that little cooler they had for my chair, and that thing shredded from my crotch to my ankle. I said, well, I guess it's been a while since I put these on.
that would have made it just pure gold if they would have.
Oh,
left
I couldn't believe they did, but. You know, I couldn't believe it, and at the time I was kind of glad, but now looking back on it, I'm like, man, they should have put that crap in there. That would have been great. But, yeah, I guess maybe they didn't want to show me in my underwear with my, you know, my leg hanging out the back of it. That probably wouldn't have won us any favors with anybody. I don't imagine. Ain't knew many people will see that. So, because at that time I was about 40 pounds heavier than I am now. So, you know, and I'm still a big old boy. But
combinations on the show was you and Godwin. And let Josh jump in here in just a second. I'm sorry, Josh, but one of my other favorite episodes, and we'll jump into you and Godwin in your relationship in just a second, but one of my other favorite episodes was Godwin when he got the hot tub in his front yard.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah. is there a backstory to that one?
The boy, for whatever reason, he has always wanted one. And, you know, I'll give you a little peek into mine and Godwin's life. So just even more so than everybody already knows. So, and everybody swore it coincided with the show, but for me it didn't. But it wasn't long after the show started that I was having all sorts of back trouble. It kept wanting to come out of line. My sciatic nerve was killing me, just couldn't do nothing. So I went and saw a doctor about it. And they said, essentially, well, you got two options. You're overweight, so you can lose weight, or we can cut on your back and, you know, burn nerve endings off and all that. And I was like, ho, easy now. I've never met a person that said, you know what, that back surgery, best thing ever happened to me. And so I said, let's try that weight loss deal. So with the weight loss deal, I had to have an accountability partner, right? So Gavin was heavy too. So I was like, Gavin, let's start working out. So we joined a local gym, and we were a long way from really hurting ourselves working out, but we made a conscious effort. We did it every morning, 7 o'clock, and we started, losing weight, and everything was good. But I'll never forget one morning we was in there, we was taking a shower, getting ready to head to work, and the hot water went out in the shower, and all I heard was, and God was just sitting there getting blasted by cold water on his belly, and the boy cannot move. He is locked up. He can't even reach up to turn the thing off. Like, he is frozen, literally. So I'm like, what is wrong with you? And he can't get nothing out other than, so I took it upon myself, he's my best friend. But I took it upon myself, and I'm like, I just reached in there, he naked, I'm naked, we all naked. I turned the shower off, and then he said, Oh, I was about to lock up and die. I couldn't. So Godwin has always he's always hated cold water. So he's always, had a hot tub or, a jacuzzi tub or something like that to get in, for real hot water. So then when we found that one, he was like, oh, now we're into something. Rednecks, we're real easy to keep pacified. Little indulge us on little stuff like that, and we're fine. The one thing that nobody saw on that one was when we unloaded that hot tub the first time, it was in Goblin's yard, obviously. Well, it's got a little bit of a pitch to it. Well, we got it out on the corner of it. And when it come off that trailer, that thing rolled to the bottom of that hill, end over end, like a runaway Ferris wheel, and landed in the ditch. And pieces went everywhere. The boy was heartbroken. I mean, absolutely heartbroken when that thing exploded. I mean, it looked like you just dumped a grand piano on the ground. Pieces went everywhere. And them boys, I'll give it them. That L.A. bunch, there's 30 of them. Well, one of them is a borderline engineer. I mean, he's there to fix stuff and do all that. That boy was able to put that hot tub back together and get that thing to working. You won't talk about, but I mean, that thing had wood shrapnel up and down his driveway and the yard and the ditch, and I was like, oh my goodness gracious. And of course we're all laughing like, now there's your episode right there, we just killed the boy's hopes and dreams. But they were like, no, because he's so happy, we want to see him happy in the hot tub. So that boy got to working on that thing, put it back together, and lo and behold, it held water and watertight, and the heater worked on it and everything else. And that, oh man, it's great.
Didn't y'all get it from a junkyard?
Oh yeah, we got it from a junkyard. We got it from down there at old Squirrel's place. Yeah, we found it back there. Well, I don't even remember what we was looking for. And at the time, we didn't even know that it worked. But Godwin himself is pretty mechanically inclined, so he was like, "Well, if I can get this for that, I can make the thing work." He's like, "I can fix just about anything." So that was just part of the whole deal, and then it worked anyway. I guess somebody it wasn't the best-looking thing, so somebody just trying to get rid of it. But, yeah, that was the local salvage yard right down the road here where we found that thing. I'm just glad he eventually moved it from his front yard to his back patio. That was a Of course, he ain't got but three neighbors, but, that's part of it. But, no, man, me and Godwin is he's as good as they come, too. Me and him do a lot together. We always mess with each other, tell him we're the glue that hold the family business together, the two. But we're also quick to point out we got the wrong last name. If everything goes to pot around here, we know who the first two to go are. So, So I guess, man, when you work with that kind of fear, you make yourself valuable because you want to keep doing what you do. So, there's a lot of people said, y'all need to write a book on how to survive a family business when you're not in the family, because most people can't do it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But it is it's a fun dynamic to see. But y'all just really are just buddies. I mean, you just
Oh yeah, we're friends. We fish together a lot. We obviously hunt together all the time, and even spend time away from work together. So, Godwin now is kind of runs our shipping and receiving and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, we work kind of hand in hand still. He still builds a few duck calls like me, kind of when we need it. And, you know, it's not our everyday job now for sure. But no, he's
Martin,
good people, man.
Before we jump into the personalities just a little bit, and I've got some questions when it comes to that. One of the backstories I have to know, and I saw this one on the other night because they're running reruns on the Outdoor Channel of Duck Dynasty, but if you lose a ping pong game, you get popped in the belly with a ball. What's the backstory on that?
Oh, you never did that growing up at camp? The red belly rule?
We always did that.
Oh, yeah, we did that. Yeah, growing up, if you lost at ping pong, you wore it on the chin, son. It made you either quit playing or become better, one of the two. That little ping pong ball hurt on a bare stomach. Because, you know, everybody got to line up and fire them at you. So it was just, ooh, yeah. No, that was, yeah, we did that always growing up. And then as you get into high school and locker rooms and all that kind of stuff. So luckily, the good thing is being a hunter and, you know, fishermen and all that, your hand-eye coordination goes along with it. So I was always pretty good at ping pong. Now, I ain't played in a long time, so I'd probably get my butt strapped now. But luckily, I didn't have to take many of them on the chest like that.
Well, let's spend a few minutes on personalities, just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a little backstory, insight onto the personalities of Duck Commander and everybody involved. But Jep wasn't in a lot of those first episodes, a lot. And then he became a big part of it later on. And Alan's really not in any of them until the end.
Yeah. So Al, you know, he was the lead minister at the church that we all attend. So he was kind of always the, excuse me, the odd man out. Just because he didn't work here. He didn't work for us. And, you know, so it was just kind of always hard to tie him in with all the other stuff that we did. But eventually what he left being lead minister at the church because he was being asked to do so many speaking, like, you know, coming to, you know, kind of preach, not revivals, not like an evangelist, so to speak, but to just be a public speaker. He's a great speaker. There's no doubt about it. So he couldn't fully give his time to the church. And so what he did was ended up moving on from the church. He worked for us as a basically like Phil's handler almost, because Phil liked traveling with him, and we always needed somebody to go with Phil. We just liked having somebody there with him. So it kind of all worked out on that regard. So once Al got freed up from the church and was able to be in more, he was in more. You know, but just a solid dude. Just him and Godwin. Godwin actually came to work here because of Al. Al and Godwin were neighbors back in the day. And Al is you know, always been a big spiritual influence to Godwin. And so that's how Godwin got here. And then on Jep's side, so Jep's not a call builder. That was nothing we ever really tried to hide. And it was well known. I mean, to the hunters of the deal, everybody knew Jep didn't build them. And so Jep was actually our main camera guy for when we were doing all the Duckman DVDs. He was the cameraman and editor. So, you know, he was the weird creative type. So he had his own little office with his computers and studio and all that kind of stuff. So, but they wanted him in there to be more involved. So we just kind of, the easiest way was to just make him a part of the duck call room instead of having him separate and apart, you know, because he needed to be a part of it because he's the baby of the family. So therefore, everybody has that baby of the family. For crying out loud, I'm the baby of my family. So, you know, and with that comes the special treatment and the being spoiled and all that kind of stuff, you know. So, and he was just different than the rest of, you know, he's more into, you know, what's the right word? More into like style and all that kind of stuff, where we just, you know, we wear whatever the crap we want to, kind of a deal. But he was always, you know, fashion forward, I guess, if you want to call him that. I mean, not to that extent, but, you know, he was the one that kept up on trend, and, you know, he was a gamer. So I think, you know, just kind of the interesting the dynamic between the personalities of a Jace, who's, you know, extremely literal, and then you got Jeb, who's extremely creative. When you put them in there, you just kind of got some comedic gold, you know. So I think that was part of it. But, yeah, now, you know, Jeb doesn't even – he doesn't even work here anymore. He actually now lives in Austin, Texas, and he has always wanted to open a restaurant. So instead of a restaurant, he opened a food truck, and that's what he does now. He lives in Austin,
I
Texas,
did not
runs
know that.
A food truck. Yeah, so he's living his best life doing, you know, just – you know, I think every now and then you just kind of – you know, for some people that want to stay in the family business, they do, but sometimes some of them want to get out. And, you know, he saw a way out where he didn't film duck hunts anymore, and he's taking it and kind of making the best of it. Him and his whole family live over there, and, you know, we see them every so often, but more like anything else now, you know, holidays and special events, and that's about it. And so, you know, that was always kind of the fun part. Yeah, me and Jeff were the closest in age, so we hung out quite a bit together. So,
see, from the outside looking in, him and Cy had a kind of a special bond. It appeared from the show. And then you and Jace and you and Godwin had a bond. And it looked like, from an outside perspective looking in.
Yeah, I would say that that's fair. You know, and I think you see it on the like with me and Jace, the deal, you know, the deal that kind of tied me and Jace together was our, not that everybody doesn't love duck hunting, but with me and Jace, we want to kill ducks the way we want to kill ducks, which is down right in your face, not, you know, no pass shooting, no none of that. So we constantly were kind of the weird ones that would move stuff, and, you know, we'd be moving decoys at night together. We'd be, you know, cutting this limb in the middle of the night and then spray painting where we cut it black so that nothing could see it. You know, we didn't want to flare nothing because of a cut limb. You know, going back and looking at all the stupid stuff we did. But we did it for our love of the game. You know, and I, you know, the only other one that was really like that was Phil. Well, Phil's, you know, 70 years old, so he didn't want to be out there doing that stuff at night. So we spent a lot of time together doing that. And the other thing is, We spent a lot of time on the golf course, so, you know, and that was just, so that's where, you know, mine and Jace's bond was just from spending all that outside time together, not just in the call shop. And then, you know, me and Godwin, same deal. Them Robertson boys ain't much on fishing. They were commercial fishermen, so they never really did it with a rock.
Rod and reel is not their cup of tea.
Doesn't appeal to them. They would rather go catch 300 pounds in a hoop net. you know, which, hey, I'll tell you this, if you ever went with them when they set hoop nets in the spring to catch flatheads and ops, you know, all that stuff. They don't use bait in their nets. They set it on current and like little highways in the river that they found through the years. There's never a stitch of bait in their nets, and you'll get out there and you can't pick that thing up. There's so many catfish in it. Like, I mean, it's unbelievable. Like,
that's,
you know,
unreal.
And feels like, boy, if you don't move that net right there in February, it's going to be full of crappie next time you come to it. And sure enough, it will be slam full of the prettiest crappie you've ever seen that you just got to open the hatch door and let go.
Yeah, let go.
And it's like, and you're like, oh, but they'd be so good to eat. I mean, just so, oh, man, look, nobody'd ever know. That's when you test the character of a man, you know. Like, nobody'd ever know, but, you know, when you're staring down 200 pounds of crappie that you didn't have to do nothing for and you just got to open the hatch on them and let them go, that's tough. That'd test a man.
That's tough.
So, you know, so that's kind of that whole deal. You know, the thing that kind of, what was weird about the show is they put Jace in kind of the jokester personality and the jokester mindset, when that was never really him. I mean, he's very much just dry wit, you know, not a prankster. He was more so that deal. And where Willie was always the prankster, and they kind of flipped those roles to show a boss and an employee relationship, I think, that most of the world lives with, you know. It's not often where the boss is kind of the jokester and the, you know, the guy in the call shop would be your dry wit kind of no nonsense guy. But, you know, that was kind of the funny thing, was the kind of a little bit of the role reversal in that. So you know, because Willie is very much still a kid at heart. So he still likes to play jokes on people. The only problem is now he made enough money, he can play really bad jokes. He can tear your stuff up because he can go buy you a new one. You know? Yeah. So his joke level has gone to a new extreme on something. Yeah, but that's what's so funny about it, you know. But it is, you know, and I think that's kind of what made everything work was the blend of personalities that everybody had, you know.
Perfect
I think
blend.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
It's what you see, you know. I always, everybody asks me, you know, about my stuff, and I'm like, hey, I'm just here to give you one line. I'm here to give you one line of wit and wisdom, and that was pretty much my deal throughout the whole show, which is kind of how I operate in my life. I don't say a whole lot. I'll just pop up, make a sarcastic remark or, you know, something just kind of Captain Obvious style that nobody ever really thinks of, and then I put my head back down and go back to doing my thing, so... And poor Goblin, I mean, he needed to have subtitles with him everywhere he went, you know. We did a lot of events together, and I always tell everybody, I'm only here to be Goblin's closed captioning, so if y'all need me to translate, you just let me know. And so that was, you know, so yeah, we all kind of had our own little role in it, and it worked. I mean, and it wasn't really forced, you know. And Cy, good Lord, we touched on him, you know, a little bit last time, but good grief. You never know. You never know with that guy. You honestly never know what you're going to get, but it's generally always great.
Miss K, Martin, mm-hmm. because if you go back and watch a lot of these episodes, we've talked about Phil, and you know, we were talking about, hey, don't come back till after duck season, you know, don't. But a lot of stuff happened at their house. What was Miss K's initial reaction to it all? To as the show progressed on, because she became a signature part of that whole show. The what's the word I'm looking for? Just the, oh gosh, the matriarch of the whole show.
Well, and it actually worked out to be perfect because, in a way, you know, if you go back through the years, none of this would have happened without Kay, because a lot of people that would have gone through what Phil put her through, would have just left and never looked back. They wouldn't have honored their vows. They wouldn't have, you know, stuck it out through the hard times and the, you know, the awful times to then be, you know, what they are today. So I was always super glad. And, you know, Kay absolutely ate it up. I mean, she loves it. She just always, I mean, you think about a woman who was essentially, the only time she came to town was to go to church and the grocery store on, you know, during the week, and the rest of the time she was down on the bank of the river with little to no human contact, to be kind of put into that role. She just loved it, and it was great, and, you know, couldn't be happier for her. And it was, and she is, though, man. She's always, you know, even in the early days of the panic of the order, she was always kind of the calming voice, the mother. I mean, really, you know, I still call her mama to this day. You know, always met you with a hug, always had you something hot to eat on the stove. And even when we're duck hunting, you know, Phil will say, I don't need no technology, no watch, none of that. Well, the first thing he does every morning is says, hey, how long we got till legal? I'm like, but I thought you didn't need no watch. You know, I just looked down there, and he's like, well, you know, we got to know that. And then he'll... One about, you know, we'll have 4, 5, 6 left to shoot or whatever. He'll say, hey, hand me that, get Miss K on that phone and hand it to me. I'll tell her to get lunch going. I'm like, but I thought you didn't want no cell phone. He said, well, we got to eat.
Justifying it.
Yeah. He's like, well, but I don't need it. As long as y'all got it, I don't need it, you know. But I'm like, well, what if we ain't here? He said, I'll be fine.
Another off-the-wall question for you, Martin. As all those mm-hmm. production people are around, I, you know, from watching the show, Miss K,
unbelievable cook from hearing it from y'all, the production people that have been living in California their whole life, and they're here sitting in the middle of nowhere, Louisiana, and Miss Kay's cooking. What was their initial reaction to her food?
Oh, it was so funny because we would, you know, we'd sit down and eat and at the family dinners, and there would, you know, the first couple of years, Kay cooked all those family dinner meals herself, and it was a fight once we got done filming that for the leftovers between the crew. Like, I'm talking about, you would think a bunch of dogs just descended on a dumpster, son. I mean, they would come in there.
Yeah.
You got to think, these people ain't ever ate nothing with butter.
Yeah,
sugar.
That's true.
They ain't ever had a pan of cornbread that had bacon in the bottom of it, because you use the grease to keep it from sticking to your skillet. They ain't ever had nothing like that. They ain't ever had no homemade banana pudding with 7 pounds of sugar in it. You know, it was just, you know, just. I mean, she'll always tell you. She'll say everything I cook is made with love and lard. So. You know, she's definitely not one place you want to end up with if you got any cholesterol issues, because she'll go ahead and send that through the roof. But, yeah, they all – and she would be so good to them. Like, some of them would eat something and be like, oh, my gosh, that's really good. Well, here, come here. I'll show you how to make it. You know, like chocolate pies and making meringue and, you know, making like – because they had never – you know, those people – they think of Thanksgiving, they're like turkey and stuffing. None of them had ever come down here and had cornbread dressing. You know, stuff that we take for granted that's been here our whole lives, you know. And so she would teach them how to make cornbread dressing or chicken and dumplings. I mean, you just, you know, this again, the stuff we eat regularly that the rest of the world doesn't know nothing about, you know. So it was, oh, she took those people in, man. Some of those girls on that crew became like extra daughters for her, since she had four sons her whole life. And she still does it. I mean, she does it for women at the church coming out of bad relationships or bad deals, you know, all that. She still takes people in under her wing and tries to, you know, help and teach kind of through cooking and all that kind of stuff. So just an awesome woman. Awesome woman.
Well, there are so many. Look, next week, Martin, I want to spend a little bit of time on the duck call room dynamic, and then I want to spend some time talking about the storylines, how they were come up with, because I think that people are going to find it interesting how all the storylines, they happened, but they may not have happened at that certain time.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool how y'all did that, because you and I have talked about it a little bit. So I want to spend time on those two things in next week's episode.
All right. That sounds good, man.
Well, Josh, Martin, thank y'all again for being here. Another great episode of Becoming Martin. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
Ladies and gentlemen!